The Major League Baseball season begins Thursday, and games will be different this year. That's because MLB has instituted a number of rules changes that are designed to speed up the games and create more action on the field. Pitchers will have a certain amount of time to throw pitches, and batters will have to be ready in the batter's box in a predetermined time, too. The bases will be larger, and where players station themselves defensively will be dictated to a degree as well. To talk about these new rules and the baseball season is baseball writer and author Andrew Laker. Andy, welcome to the program.
Hi, Scott. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. So how significant are these rules changes?
I think they're very significant, and it's kind of catching people who follow exclusively Major League Baseball and Major League Baseball players, at least the longtime veterans, quite a bit by surprise. But these rules have actually been floating around in the minors, at least with the pitch clock, for example, since 2015, and some of the other changes with larger bases and shifts. That's been going on since last season throughout the minors. So, if you've gone to games in Reading or Harrisburg or Altoona in the minor leagues last year, you've seen these changes already. But I think they're significant changes, obviously. I think they're changes for the better, but that's my own opinion, which is probably split among a lot of people.
So how did these changes work out in the minor leagues?
I think they worked out very well. The rule changes, at least with the pitch clock, for example, started in 2015. And, of course, everybody's head was exploding for the first few months that went in. But, you know, since then, it's just become part of the game, part of the fabric. And players know that they can no longer really procrastinate, whether they're on the mound getting ready to throw the ball or in the batter's box. One of the things that, you know, Major League Baseball did not do this haphazardly. They've studied this. They put most of the big rule changes, the bigger bases, the pickoff rules, the shifting, that went into effect last year. And you know baseball very well, obviously, Scott, and you know you have four levels of the minor leagues. Well, these were in effect in the minor leagues, all the rule changes last year. So you're talking about 8,000 games over four levels. And that would be the equivalent to more than three Major League Baseball seasons that MLB officials have had a chance to study this. And they're going to tweak things along the way, obviously. They've been tweaking things with the pitch clock since 2015. So what you see now is not the final product, but what you see now is the new way of doing business going forward.
So just to let everyone know, with the pitch clock, pitchers will have 15 seconds when they get the ball back to deliver it to the plate. That's with no men on base. If there is a runner on base, they have 20 seconds. The idea is to speed up the game. The average length of a major league game was 3 hours, 5 minutes last year, and quite frankly, it felt longer than that. So far in spring training, when they've used these rules, the time for games has been about 235, 236, something like that. What about the minor leagues? I mean, did it speed up the game? Did it make for more action on the field?
It definitely sped up the game. For example, last year in the minor leagues for a nine-inning game, the average time of game was 2 hours and 39 minutes, which was down 20 minutes from earlier in the season. They started to enforce the clock. Usually, last season, they gave the teams basically a few weeks grace period. So in that grace period where there were 335 games where they didn't use the clock at all, the time was actually 24 minutes longer than it was in 2021 when it was 3 hours and 3 minutes. So it's definitely a big improvement in the minors. Where you're going to see, I don't think you're going to see that big of a jump once the major league season starts, because you got to factor in commercial times. Somebody's got to pay the bills, of course. So there's always going to be that. Nationally televised games always tend to run a little longer because of commercials. But overall, Scott, this is going to speed up the pace of play. And I found that just listening to people in the spring training games where they're kind of losing their minds over ruining the pace of play. And baseball, of course, is meant to be played over seemingly a four-day span. These are the same people that complain about pitchers stepping off or about batters taking their time to get in the box. So the same people that are complaining about they're ruining the game because they're cutting it at a time are the same people who would also complain about this guy's taking too long. So bottom line is you're never going to satisfy everybody, right?
Yeah, and I think that, as you said, there will be some time to getting used to it. But from a fan's perspective, I mean, you're right. I'm a huge baseball fan, and there were many times over the last few years where games just seemed to really drag on. You know, some people will attribute it to the attention span of younger people, and that may have something to do with it. But the bottom line is the games just dragged on and there wasn't enough action on the field.
And I agree with that. And part of the reason, if you have players taking excessive amount of times coupled with the games now over the last few years, there have been so many more strikeouts, so they have that fewer balls that are put into play. So you have that, you know, I don't think there's much action in a strikeout as opposed to a double play grounder or a triple into the gap. So over the last few years, you've seen a spike in strikeouts. Now, if you bring that down, coupled with improving the pace of play, your product's going to improve on the field.
I want to talk about analytics in just a moment, which is kind of what you're referring to when the result has been more strikeouts. Just so everyone knows, and with the knowledge, and not everyone listening to this is a baseball fan, for those who exceed the pitch clock, the pitchers, a ball is added to the count. For the batter who's not in the box within 8 seconds, they have a strike that is added to their count as well. Now, you mentioned the shift, and again, this is kind of baseball 101, but how would you describe a shift? What has it done to baseball in the last few years, and what's going to be different this year?
Well, a shift basically, if baseball 101, you can imagine a player at every position, you know, nine players in the field, and they're in, you know, what traditionally, you know, we have designated positions. But over the last few years, and of course, the shift itself has been around for generations in one form or another, but it's really mutated in the last few years where you'll have these exaggerated shifts where instead of having a traditional third baseman and shortstop on the left side of the infield, if you have a left-handed hitter up, all of a sudden you just have one player on that left side of the infield. You now have three infielders to the right side of the infield, and that cuts down on a lot of ground balls. It also cuts down line drives that would normally be singles or even doubles into the outfield that are now all of a sudden being caught. So they wanted to obviously improve the game, improve the number of hits and things like that. So they started in the minor leagues last year, and they're doing it now in the major leagues, where all four infielders, when the ball is being delivered, must be on the dirt, or they could be on the grass if the infield's playing in, where two players are on each side of second base and two players are on each side of first base. And barring an injury or a substitution, Scott, these players cannot switch positions during a game or during an inning, rather. So if your best defensive player is a shortstop, he can't all of a sudden switch over to second base because there's a left-handed hitter up. The second baseman has to stay on second. Shortstop stays at shortstop's position. One of the reasons why they're doing this, Scott, is last year, and again, you know, if you're a baseball fan, you kind of feel this. The overall batting average was .243 in the majors, which is the lowest it's been in the majors since 1968, which was the last year of the 15-inch high pitcher's mound. 1968, of course, was the year of the pitcher, just some phenomenal numbers starting with Bob Gibson and his microscopic earned run average. And after 68, Major League Baseball reduced the height of the mound from 15 inches to 10 inches, and offense started to go back up until the last few years, culminating or plummeting last year with a .243 overall batting average. One thing's interesting with the shift, again, why they're doing it, as the numbers show, there were a lack of singles last year, which doesn't sound like much, but these are all these balls that would normally go through the hole between first and second base that are being gobbled up by the shift. Last season, teams averaged 5.3 singles a game, which is the lowest in history. And only, it's the third lowest in history, with only the 2020 season and 21 season being lower. So you can see over the last few years that this shift has really taken away a lot of offense. Now, what's interesting is banning the shifts last year in AA and below. They didn't ban it in AAA last year. They will, of course, this year. But in AA and below last year, with the shift being abolished, there was an 8-point jump in batting averages for left-handed hitters. So clearly it's working, and it'll work in the major leagues as well. So instead of seeing, say, Kyle Schwarber with the Phillies grounding out to the second baseman who's playing, you know, 40 feet in the right field because of a shift, that ball now goes through for a single. And that puts a runner on base. That gets people moving.
And you just pointed out one of the players that a lot of people are saying would benefit most from this new rule, because Kyle Schwarber, a left-handed batter that does hit a lot of ground balls, a lot of balls to the right side. Our guest today is Andy Lenker, baseball writer and author, formerly wrote for the Patriot News. Andy, some of the things that we've been talking about, these rule changes, are the result of analytics. And for those who maybe don't follow the game that closely, how would you describe analytics?
It's like math on steroids. Analytics is really just a, for certainly baseball, just a deep dive behind the numbers. You know, it's funny, they've been, analytics is a kind of a newfound term the last 30 years or so in baseball, really introduced by a great baseball historian, Bill James. But analytics have really been around forever, starting with Casey Stengel, for example, back in the 50s, realizing that, hey, I have two left fielders. One does better against this type of pitching. One does better against that type of pitching. I'm going to platoon these guys because my stats show that this is what happens. Analytics is really about all statistics and probability. And they basically just suss it out. What does this guy do better in this situation against this pitcher? And, you know, sometimes it goes against normal convention where you would think, well, a left-handed pitcher has a better chance of getting out a left-handed hitter in a relief situation. But actually, analytically, you're going to find out that maybe that left-handed pitcher does better actually against left-handed, right-handed hitters rather than left-handed hitters. I don't know if there's a great way. I've never been asked to define analytics, guy. You kind of caught me. But basically, I would say it's a headache. It's a way to kind of, boy, you take analytics, Scott, and you can. It's like statistics. You know, you can make a ham sandwich out of statistics if you want. It's a conversation piece. I think some teams overly rely on analytics. It seems every team now in the major leagues has an analytic department, and it seems that all these folks are number crunchers from Ivy League schools, you know, and they've never picked up a baseball. And some other teams just rely solely on the time-honored method of what do your eyes tell you, can the guy play or not? Not the numbers telling me. But your eyeball test.
Yeah, the difference between Casey Stengel and today is Casey Stengel didn't have computers at his disposal, and there are so many more numbers to crunch into it. But what it's done is, you know, the numbers have shown, and this is the result, and they're talking about launch angles for bats and, you know, different things like that, is that there are a lot more strikeouts. A strikeout used to be a bad thing, but nowadays major league hitters look at a strikeout as, it's a strikeout, it's three strikes. Next time up, I'll hit a home run. They're trying to hit home runs with their launch angles. They're striking out a lot more. They're walking a lot more. As a result, not as much action on the field. As you said, the singles are down. This year, the bases are going to be a little bit bigger, from 15 inches to 18 inches. And you also touched on this, that the pitchers will not be able to throw over to first base as much as so, you know, what I'm getting back to is analytics said that stolen bases weren't as valuable, that sacrifice bunts weren't as valuable as they once were. Will that change this year?
It will change slightly. It's changed slightly and slowly because now the way the game has changed, teams don't take as many chances trying to steal bases because outs are so precious. It's funny, Scott, because they talk about outs being so precious, they don't want to take a chance of having a runner thrown out, but they're okay with teams averaging 10 strikeouts a game. And if they sat down and looked at it, analytically speaking, if your team strikes out 9 times a game, which is perfectly acceptable by today's standards, you're only playing a 6-inning game, aren't you? Mm. You're not even putting the ball in play for 3 whole innings. You're giving away 9 of your 27 outs. Now, they're hoping to jumpstart stolen base attempts. Last year, the attempts by team per game were down 0.5 base a game, which people go, that doesn't sound like much. In the 80s and 90s, teams were averaging, 0.75 attempts a game. So in a sense, you're losing, almost half of, half, a third or half of your attempts from just a generation ago. This is the one rule, Scott, that I personally don't like, where pitchers are limited to 3 what they call disengagements. And the disengagement can be a pickoff attempt, a fake pickoff attempt, or simply stepping off the rubber, or when the defense calls time. You only get 3 of those per bat. And the first 2 are kind of on the house, but on that third attempt or that third disengagement, if you don't get that base runner, you're going to get called for a balk, which is going to move the base runner up, of course, if we're going back to baseball 101. What you see a lot now in spring training are 2 things. Runners are more active after the first pickoff attempt that doesn't work, and they're almost definitely active on the second pickoff attempt, because they know that if the guy's not going to throw over unless he knows he has you, and if you kind of bait him to throw over there and you know he's not going to get you, he's not going to throw over because he's going to risk a balk. So that's what baseball's hoping to jumpstart. I don't like it because it adds an artificial strategy to the game that hasn't been there ever. Mm. And I think that's a chance to negatively impact the there's a lot of cerebral action, as you know, going on in baseball. Some people, my daughter, for example, might call it boring, but there's a lot of thinking going on when runners are on base, and this kind of takes away that thinking.
Yeah, Andrew, I want to run something by you here. This is an old school thought, and I've heard it a few times here in the last few years when many of these changes have been proposed, not just this year, but in previous years. Stop trying to make people who hate baseball like baseball.
I don't think that's ever going to happen. Have you ever found anybody that just says, I like baseball? It's either I love baseball or I'd rather do anything other than watch baseball. I don't know if I ever come across anybody. I like baseball.
Yeah. So no gray area.
Loves it or doesn't love it. I'm sorry?
So no gray area.
I don't think so. Now, obviously, I'm sure there is. I just think with these rule changes, baseball's just trying to juice is always a bad word with baseball, but juice interest in the game, have more action. Maybe you do get more eyeballs watching the TV now if you know the game's going to be less than 3 hours. You said something, Scott, that the 2 words that just make me shudder, launch angle.
that is
one of the banes of the game today. Launch angle, exit velocity. Hitters become so preoccupied with that they forget the fundamentals. And I always think about Henry Aaron, Scott, and I think Henry Aaron would laugh at launch angle and exit velocity, because when Aaron played, all he wanted to know was how far is the left field fence. Oh, it's 330 feet. Okay, I only have to hit the ball 331 feet. And when did you ever see, how many times did you ever see Hank Aaron hit an upper deck home run? Or hit a ball that left the ballpark if they measured it then 110 miles an hour. It wasn't necessary. His idea was put the ball in play. All I have to do is hit it 335 feet. I don't have to hit it 500 feet. It still just counts the same amount of runs. So I think players get caught up in that part of the analytics, and I think that's a deterrent to the game. But that's just me, and that puts me in today's minority.
Well, I'm there with you, I guess. We only have about 90 seconds left, Andy. The World Baseball Classic just concluded last week, Japan beating the U.S. for the championship. It seemed to have created a lot of excitement.
That was it was a terrific 2 weeks. They had terrific pools set up. Everyone was competitive. If you watch the final game between Japan and the United States, and if you'd said 2 weeks before going into the tournament that you would have Shohei Ohtani facing Mike Trout with the game on the line, you would have been salivating. You'd want to see that matchup. And it didn't end well for the United States, but it ended great for baseball because it has people talking about it. There were a couple of bad injuries. The Mets lost their closer, Edwin Diaz, for the season with a knee injury while celebrating a victory. And Jose Altuve was hit in the hand and fractured a thumb, and he'll be out for 2 months. Injuries happen. These types of injuries could have happened in spring training in a regular, mundane game. So I think the injuries are overblown. I think if people look at the excitement, the camaraderie, the nation against nation, if you will, I think it was just a wonderful 2 weeks for baseball.
Season starts on Thursday, and for the first time in years, every major league team will be starting on Thursday as well. So Andy Linker, baseball writer and author, hey, I want to thank you very much for being with us today.
Anytime, Scott, my pleasure.
Thanks for listening to The Spark on WITF, your home for NPR and discovering all things local. I'm Scott Lamar. Have yourself a great day.